Hello, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. It turns out I'm the host and Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Let's talk a little real estate. Chief Executive Officer and President at Baird Warner is Steve Baird. BairdWarner.com is their website. And Steve, you're on the air. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. So you're closing out the year here pretty soon. I suppose generally, real estate gets a little soft, the sale and the purchase of homes in November, December, right?
Yeah, there's always a seasonal slowdown this time of year. It goes a lot like the weather goes. So as we get towards the end of the year, the business slows down on a seasonal pattern, and that's happening just like normal this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see there's some normalcy. Is it feeling more like 2020 or more like 2019?
I hope nothing feels like 2020. That was an unusual year, but it seems to be back to a pattern just like 2019, which was also a very good year.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, pardon me, I thought 2020 was pretty good real estate-wise.
Yeah, it was pretty good real estate-wise. We sold a lot of property in 2020, but it was just a very crazy year for everybody, and so I think I'm glad that we don't have that kind of craziness anymore.
Yeah. You know, and someday you're going to be telling this to your grandkids or whatever and say, no kidding. When we sold houses in 2020, we had to wear face masks. If we could sell them at all, we had to sell them over Zoom and we had to social distance. It would be the strangest thing. But I presume that's in your rearview mirror. You must remember it that way.
Well, it's actually not in our rearview mirror. We still use a lot of those same techniques or processes as everybody is doing in the rest of their life when you go to a restaurant or the grocery store. So I'm hoping in a few years or maybe next year we'll be able to go back to the way we interacted with people in 2019.
How sensitive.
But we're still using those same safety procedures that we used last year.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. Maybe that is the new norm. I'm also just thinking about interest rates and how sensitive home sales are to that. As they creep up a little bit, do you notice it right away? Or maybe we're still so attractive interest rate-wise that selling a home is actually still a very popular notion for people?
Well, interest rates today are still very good. They're about what they were a year ago, and they haven't changed very much. There is talk that next year they will go up. The sort of consensus is about 1%. And if that happens in as it usually does in a slow, gradual way, it will have some impact in the marketplace, but not a lot. They're still very low. You know, these are historical low numbers for interest rates.
What's the inventory like right now?
That's the biggest challenge we have. Inventory is very low and has been that way for the last year and a half. And it's amazing that we can, we're going to have a record year this year in terms of sales. And we can do it with inventory levels that are down somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30%. Hmm. And that's really, if you can say with record year that it's holding up the market, it is. And we're not anticipating that's going to change a lot. I was hoping that we would get more people listing their homes, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Because there are just fewer homes to move into, the cost is therefore elevated, and that's all, I presume, related to the supply chain?
I don't think it's really supply chain related. I think right now, people are mostly worried that they can't buy a home. So they don't want to be in a situation where they sell their home and then it's so hard to find something, they can't find something. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then we just had, the last 2 years have been a very high sales cycle, and they've been record years, and so we've eaten into what is a normal inventory. But there still are a lot of buyers out there. If you bring a property on the marketplace that's really attractive and priced right, you'll have multiple offers and get into a bidding war situation. Those are still very common.
No kidding. I assume that sort of had gone away, but there's still that sort of thing, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Particularly, you know, if the property is, you know, right in the wheelhouse in a particular community, you know, it's right at where a lot of other homes are and something that people want, well located and so forth. If you bring a good property on the marketplace, within a couple of days, you'll have, you know, it's not unusual to have 8 or 10 offers.
Ah, really? And what's the sweet spot? Is it 350,000? Is it 450? 300?
Yeah, the sweet spot is what it is for a particular market. So it varies community to community. So, you know, in some of the higher end markets, that can be 700,000 or 800,000. In the low markets, it can be 200,000. It just depends what's the average in that particular marketplace. And, you know, it really literally varies town to town.
Stephen Baird is the chief executive officer, and he's the president at Baird and Warner, BairdWarner.com. Okay, Steve, I'm out of time today. Let's catch up after the first of the year. Have a great holiday season.
Okay, thank you very much.
Joan Salzman, senior reporter at CNET, joins us now. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
Lots of stories on CNET. Let's plow through a few of them. The Democrats have announced a bill to stop bots from stealing Christmas. What's that all about?
Right. Well, it's got a good name all in itself. It's called the Stopping Grinch Bots Act. And what this is trying to do, this is a problem that affects a lot of people at Christmas, but it can affect anyone any time of the year. It's when these software bots are designed by some bad actors to snap up inventory of online sales for high demand items. And then the idea is they profiteer off them. You know, they sell them and resell them at a markup. The problem is, you know, that means parents or other loved ones who want to get gifts for their family, they have difficulty getting those really in-demand items. And entrepreneurs, small businesses, they struggle to serve their customers. If all of a sudden, you know, if their customers say, hey, I really want to have the PS5, and they're all bought up by bots, that hurts a small business's bottom line by not being able to serve their customers well.
Hmm. And so that's going to be illegal now?
Well, they've tried to pass something like this before, and it got stalled in congressional committee. But Democrats on the Senate and on the House side are going to try to push through this one soon.
And it's not theft. We're not talking about stealing things or even stealing credit card information. These would be legitimate purchases, but then only maybe the way it happens with sports tickets or concert tickets, they then resell them on the secondary market at more than face value.
Exactly. So you see this during the holidays. You also see it around, you know, there's things like sneaker culture or, these very, very, especially when there's a limited supply of something and it's something in incredible demand, there's a great resell market for those items. Of course, everyone's familiar with, you know, I really want to get the hot concert ticket, and everything's gone from Ticketmaster. It's gone beyond Ticketmaster or trying to get a concert ticket or a basketball, an NBA game ticket. It's gone into every sort of retail now because all retail is online, especially after the last year and a half that we've been through. And so it's affecting people not only trying to get an NBA game and also go to see that hot concert, but, you know, if you're just trying to buy that hot toy to put under the Christmas tree for your kids.
I wonder if that explains in part then why we have been getting, sorry, it's sold out. It could be supply chain, but it could also be that bots have bought it and they're listed somewhere else, and you got to pay a premium for that.
I think that's why there's been a renewed effort. You mentioned supply chain, and a lot of people are thinking more about supply chain probably than they ever thought they'd have to this holiday season, because we're hearing all these fears about the stuff you want to get for your friends and family might not be there. The fact that there's also this problem of bots snapping up things that are already hard to get because of supply chain just exacerbates the problem.
So Twitter is going to change its platform a little bit, it sounds like. And if you're going to share somebody's media, their photos or videos, you have to get their consent. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. This it's a privacy and security change. So, you know, people are, it's been for a long time, the policy that on Twitter, if you share something that's, you know, abusive or inappropriate or, you know, risque, that kind of stuff comes down. But now what Twitter's doing is it's amping up its policy that if you share what they're calling private media of somebody, that basically means a video, a photo, even an audio recording of somebody who's not yourself, who isn't you, and somebody who doesn't give you the consent to post it, that person can make the case that it needs to come down. So the idea is that, you know, it's one of these internet policies, internet service platform policies that, in theory, that can be a good thing. The people that tend to be harassed with, you know, talking about like things like what people call revenge porn, when maybe a woman has, you know, non-consensual nude photos or something else of her posted online, that kind of stuff would come down because it's, you know, promiscuous. But the people that are usually targeted by this harassment are people that, you know, they're women or people in minority communities, dissidents, activists. And those are communities that Twitter generally would like to do more to protect. But like everything, it seems like on Twitter, there seems to be a downside to it, right? And that is, there have already been instances where people that are researchers of extremism are having documentation of people doing things bad that need to be held accountable, that being taken down.
Hey, do you mind if we use this against you in a court of law? No, I don't have permission. Oh, darn. This is so anti-Twitter anyway. Twitter is this free-form, crazy sharing and posting place. Fair enough. I like the upside of this. I also see it as something difficult to enforce. I want to move on to Spotify, which is going to do what for your 2021 music selections?
Right. So we have just entered the era of every year where the Spotify Wrapped comes out. So that's the annual recap Spotify does. Spotify being the biggest streaming service on the planet, the recap of not only what was the most streamed stuff generally around the world in the U.S. on its platform, but what your personalized taste trends were like over the past year.
So I get, is that a tab I click on, or does it send it to me in an email? How do I access this?
Yeah, you have to be able to use the Spotify app either on an iPhone, an iPad, or an Android mobile device. It's only in their mobile app. And it is kind of, it can be, there have been difficulties trying to find it, but if you have that app on your phone, you just go to that, it should be very prominently placed with banners saying your Wrapped experience, and you can click into it and it'll recap all these, you know, kind of quirky, personalized elements to how you listen to music in the last year. But there were some problems yesterday of people, lots of people who use Spotify love it. But what people might not realize is just how much of an event it is worldwide. You could see this huge spike in search interest in Spotify on the day that Wrapped comes out, because everyone wants to figure out how to find their Wrapped recap. And there were some problems yesterday of people finding it. It was crashing and falling down, but it seems like now you should be safe. If you can go to your mobile app and open it up, you should see what your top trends were.
Joan Salzman from CNET. I'm out of time, Joan, but let's just mention this. Netflix Red Notice is the service's most watched film yet, according to Netflix?
Yeah, at least according to how many hours, millions of hours were spent streaming. Exactly 328.8 million hours people have been streaming this movie. It has Gal Gadot in it, has Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Reynolds, and apparently it's bigger than anything else Netflix says it's ever released.
Which is not as big as Squid Game and Bridgerton and Money Heist and Stranger Things, because those aren't movies. So as movies go, Red Notice, the most watched ever, but it would not be in the running if it were up against Squid Game and stuff like that. Okay, got it.
No, yeah.
Out of time today. Joan, let's talk again soon. Thanks for helping us out.
Thank you.
Joan Salzman, senior reporter, CNET. You know, we talk a lot about the real estate market, the inventory issues, the supply-demand stuff. Michael Drew's on a phone line, and here's an interesting take on a solution to all of that. He's a founding principal at Structured Development. Thanks for joining us today, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me. I've been a big fan of your show and enjoy your broadcast, especially your speed jokes. I don't know if that's a positive outcome from the pandemic, but it seems like people are getting in touch with their funnier side.
That's really nice of you to say. That's turned out to be not an antidote, but at least a nice distraction for the last couple of years, eh?
Amen. Amen to that.
I'm looking at what you guys do, and tell us what modular homes are. What does that mean?
Well, modular homes are a fabricated form of housing that is built in a controlled environment, a manufacturing facility, and it's designed to be shipped and assembled at the job site in a matter of a day. You'll have a finished house once it's delivered to the job site. It is got significant advantages over what's called stick-built, which is built out at the job site, and that's advantages such as controlled work environment, so you never lose a day to weather. It's faster, 3 to 4 months faster than a stick-built. You don't have problems with exposure to theft, and the quality of the product is better than you would get with a product that's built subject to all those weather constraints.
Would a modular home have the same bones, though, as a stick-built one?
It actually is the modular homes that we are contracted with Connex Manufacturing is they're built out of a steel frame, whereas most stick-built homes are built with lumber. And the reason they went with a steel frame is steel studs is that it's a better controlled environment, a better product, and they're able to provide a tighter, weathertight finished product.
Steel. So then what do you hammer your sheetrock to or whatever the next layer is?
Well, good question. It's after it's insulated, after all of the mechanicals are installed and inspected and signed off by the City of Chicago inspectors, there is insulation sprayed on to achieve their required R rating, and then the drywall is screwed into the steel studs, very similar to the type of construction you find in high-rise,
yeah, right,
where metal
sure.
studs.
Mm-hmm. So then, what do these homes look like? Are they like trailer park homes? Are they like ranch houses in Chicago? What do they look like?
Well, they're anything but a trailer home. They look like a somewhat conventional bungalow. They're sided. They have a two-story construction and. They look like a market rate frame sided home that you'd find in any of the Chicago neighborhoods. Really, really nice product.
We're talking about modular homes, and this is what your business does. So then what are you buying lots, putting them there, and then selling them? Are people ordering them? How does the business model work?
Well, this business model of how we got involved in it, it grew out of the requirements to comply with the ARO. We are breaking ground today on a development called Big Deal, located at Blackhawk and Kingsbury Streets, an area that we've concentrated on for the last 20 years in development. Ultimately, it will include 487 residential units around a half-acre park. And due to its location in the Near West Pilot Zone, we were subject to the ARO requiring 20% of all the units to be affordable. While we were working towards a solution for compliance, we discovered that the inclusionary zoning policies had led to an unintended consequence, which was that the units that were delivered were smaller studios and one-bedroom units because that's what the market was delivering. So while these matched the market rate units, the corresponding affordable units did not serve the families that were looking for adequate housing. So we believe that affordable home ownership is a route towards building generational wealth and stabilizing communities, and in doing so, reversing decades of disinvestment in certain parts of the city. So we worked with the DOH policy director, Daniel Hertz, and came up with this unique approach to build larger units with more bedrooms and making them available for purchase through a program managed by the Chicago Community Land Trust.
Well, what does the... answer this. What
yes,
is
sir.
The... So then I wonder what a 2,000-square-foot home, I know it depends on the location, too, but mm-hmm. I wonder, are mm-hmm. you comparable to what a new construction stick-built house would cost in those areas?
Well, actually, because of the nature of the ARO program, the homes that we are delivering are priced at below market rate comps. For instance, we're doing 40 off-site three-bedroom townhomes at Harrison and Francisco, where the Connex units are now being delivered in the next 3 to 4 weeks. We're going to start. And they sell for $229,000 to $245,000 with detached garages included. The overall market comp for the city of Chicago average median income house is about $312,000.
Sure.
In that East Garfield Medical District area, it's higher. It's closer to $380,000. So at this price, it's a way for first-time homebuyers to build up equity at the time of closing.
We'll have to come back to this. I've got 18,000 more questions for you. But one last one is, So you're talking about a development. What about just an average home buyer who's thinking about a new construction, but it's not part of any ARO program or anything else? Would you deliver a house to that location?
Well, that wouldn't be our focus because we don't do that. But there are, Connex has delivered a number of homes to private market rate developers who are locating these in other places of the city. It's certainly a product that is interchangeable. It shows very well. It's roughly 1,600 square feet with three bedrooms, a bath and a half. So it's a wonderful product, and I think a real good way to address this chronic shortage of affordable housing.
Oh yeah, it's just a shame because if you find a home in the price range that for a lot of entry level people is affordable, then it's a problem house, or it just needs more money to fix up than you care to deliver. And then you say, okay, give me a new house, but people don't build new $200,000 houses; they build new $400,000 houses. So
it's exactly right, John. The challenge is very real for the cost. The affordable market, if you will, affordable housing covers a wide range of residents, and no one program fits all. For instance, we're building 48 units at the New City project on Schiller Place using low-income tax credits, and they're restricted to renters of 30 to 50% of AMI. What happens is that the workforce earners that we are targeting with this product, they fall in the cracks where they either make too much money to qualify for a rent-restricted unit,
yeah,
but not enough to afford today's market housing costs, especially if they're trying to raise a family.
We're out of time, Michael Drew. That's why
I said
we'll do it again, and I'll ask the other 17,000 questions I have.
Oh, sure.
Michael is a founding principal at Structured Development. And by the way, just to note, Connex Modular Construction is also a Chicago-based company, KINEXX. You are with Structured Development, and you're the founding principal. Nice to talk to you today, Michael. Let's visit again, and thanks for listening to my silly jokes.
I love them, John. Thanks.
You have a good day.
Thanks very much.
You betcha. He knows his stuff. It's 12:46. It's time for more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Illinois regulators approved the second of two rate hikes for ComEd. It allows an increase as part of an annual formula rate process that has been the source of controversy. The ability to set electricity delivery rates was at the heart of the bribery scheme to which ComEd admitted last year. The rate hike means the average household bill will increase by about 45 cents a month and will raise about $100 million for the utility next year. Over the next several years, the new law is expected to increase electric bills by a total of close to 10%, or about $8 per month on the average household bill for ComEd. The Winnetka home defended by Macaulay Culkin in the first Home Alone movie will soon be available for a one-night rental on Airbnb. The rental, decorated for the holidays, just like in the movie, will go online next Tuesday, December 7th, for a one-night stay on December 12th. You'll also get a special Lego Home Alone set to build and take home. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, this is Steve Alexander.
Yesterday, we heard what a surprisingly small share of the meat market is occupied by plant-based meats, under 1.5%. Still, that's over $1 billion being spent on fake meat each year. So today's questions are, is it healthy, and should you be feeding it to your kids? Let's go to an expert.
My name is Courtney Shuckman. I'm a registered dietitian at the University of Chicago Medical Center within the Department of Gastroenterology.
And she says if you're excluding real meat in favor of plant-based burgers and sausage and the like, you're making a mistake.
We do know from some recent research that these plant-based meat alternatives are not equivalent to animal protein sources. So they are lacking in some of the nutrients.
And just to be clear, she is not talking about
unprocessed whole food sources like beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, tofu. Those are not what I'm referencing here. It's more of like the plant-based burgers and sausages and hot dogs. These are very similar to processed meats.
And if you're a parent who has decided your child is better off without real meat, studies have shown you may be depriving them of nutrients needed for brain and body development.
Amino acids are basically the building blocks that make up a protein. In animal sources like meat and poultry and dairy products, these provide a complete protein source, so they contain all of the essential amino acids, whereas plant-based proteins do not.
But life is all about balance, isn't it? And she is not advising against a plant-based diet.
Correct. And I always advise that anytime someone's interested in pursuing more of a plant-based diet, which I highly encourage because that's where you're getting more nutritional value, you want to make sure that you're doing it appropriately, especially for your children. If they are following more of a plant-based diet, you want to make sure they're getting enough calcium, protein, iron, and those tend to be the bigger ones that are missing in a plant-based diet.
Courtney Shuckman, a registered dietitian at the University of Chicago Medical Center. Big numbers at the Chicago Board of Trade right now. Wheat is up about 27 cents. Beans are up 16. Corn is up 7 cents. How about corn fritters? From the farm to your belly, don't tell Courtney, but today is National Fritters Day. Corn, potato, apple, all of those deep-fried goodies. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Debt collectors are now okay to use social media to reach borrowers. Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy.
Hey, John. How's it going today?
What do you know about that?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story, I thought. So it's an update. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has updated their rule to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act that now communication can include newer electronic forms like email and text and social media. Now, part of that is if you are being contacted over social media, there are some rules. None of your Facebook or Instagram or Twitter followers should be able to see it. So it has to be completely private.
That's good.
They also have to identify themselves. So they can't. So if someone just kind of casually starts up a conversation with you, that's against the rules. They have to identify themselves and say they are here to collect a debt.
Well, I think, yeah, they ought to be able to reach out to borrowers. I was worried that somehow this would be made public. At least in theory, that's not going to happen.
Correct.
Talk to me about Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday. What were the numbers on those?
Yeah, really remarkable numbers. So Cyber Monday, shoppers spent a record of $9.4 billion online. That is up almost 20% from a year ago, which is a pretty staggering number. But the breakdown of it hour by hour is what I find really interesting. So for a minute, we kind of thought we were going to miss this estimate because it's right on kind of some industry watchers where their estimate was for it to be. But it was between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Consumers spent about $2.9 billion online. So that's about a third of the day's total revenue, which I thought was really interesting. So, you know, a couple of different takes I've read on that were kind of guessing that maybe people were waiting to see if they'd find, okay, what's the best deal of the day? Is this going to get lower as the day goes on? Things like that. The other thing that I thought was interesting was Adobe, who monitors all of this stuff, found that the average consumer's shopping cart was a little bigger at checkout than last year. So not only were people buying more stuff, but they were buying more expensive stuff on average.
Hmm. What if that's the Chardonnay factor as well?
Right. That 10 p.m. could have been a giveaway there, right? People start drinking and think, I'll buy an air fryer. What the heck?
What about Giving Tuesday?
Yeah. So Giving Tuesday, also a record. It was $2.7 billion dollars raised during that time. That's about 9% up from last year. And what I thought was interesting, it's not just donations. So there were a lot of forms of generosity. The Giving Tuesday organization estimated that 35 million people participated in some way. So that could include giving money, but also that's donating goods, donating time, volunteering. Volunteerism rose by about 11% compared to last year. And then gifts of food and other items, things like that, saw about an 8% increase.
Well, that's the nicest thing I've heard about humanity in a very long time.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Let's talk again next week. Thank you, Amy.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.